Well, hello out there, true crime listeners, and welcome to a special episode of All Crime, No Cattle. This is the season of the witch and the warlock, and today we're going to be sharing some special Texas Halloween stories with you. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm here as well. My name is Shay. Come cozy up to the fire as Aaron and I each have a story to share. Join us as we enter episode 36. Now, Aaron, you and I call North Texas home and have lived here most of our lives. But something much older and sinister seems to have made its home here among the woodlands and the river bottoms. Word to the wise, dear ACNC posse, you're going to want to stay close to this here warm podcast fire that we've made for this next tale. For one, it's a cold, wet Texas night, and second, there's been some disturbing sightings of a strange and terrifying creature around these parts, known simply to the locals as the Goat Man. First, I'd like to take you back to the beginning, to what might possibly be the source of these strange occurrences. And later, I'll tell you about some more recent sightings. Let's head just north of our fair burg to the city of Denton, Texas. Today, Denton is the county seat of, you guessed it, Denton County. You and I are more familiar with Denton for our love of music and the infamous Jazz Festival, right?
Yeah, we try to make it out every year.
Well, long before the fun times of the Jazz Fest, Denton was not the original hub of the county. When Denton County was first being established back in 1846, the settlers of the area had quite the time deciding on where the county seat should be located. They even tried to build a town from the ground up to hold such a position. Well, technically, they tried to establish three towns in the area. The first two failed due to lack of clean water and rampant disease. The third site was somewhat of a success and held the title of the county seat for almost a decade. In November of 1850, about 5 miles southwest of present-day Corinth, Texas, along Hickory Creek, the town of Alton was founded. For a time, this small town grew. They built a saloon, a hotel, a post office, a large Baptist church, and they even had two doctors and a couple of law offices. But again, due to lack of clean water, a better site was located close to the center of the county, and in 1857, the town of Denton was established. By 1859, Old Alton was a ghost town, and the only remaining people around the area were just simple farmers. An old cemetery and the Baptist church still stand to this day as relics of the forgotten town. Oh, and one other thing survives too. It's a lone iron and wood bridge which is nestled in the thick woods nearby. It stretches some 150 feet across the old Hickory Creek. This bridge is entered in the National Registry of Historical Places under the name Old Alton Bridge. But if you ask around in town, you'll quickly find it goes by another name, which is the Goatman's Bridge. Why Goatman's Bridge, you ask? Well, let me tell you. The legend goes a little something like this. In 1936, some 50 years after the bridge was constructed, an African-American man named Oscar Washburn settled with his family nearby. They bought this plot of land and built a little farmhouse. The surrounding property was used to raise the Washburns' prize goats. The family began to make a name for themselves locally for their high quality of meat, milk, cheese, and hides. I know you're a fan of goat's milk and goat cheese, Aaron.
Love me some goat cheese.
Yeah, me not so much. But hey, I like goat meat, so nom nom nom.
Goats are so cute, though.
I know, they are so cute, and we've often said we'd like to have goats at some point.
Oh, I'm a little goat. Oh my god, goats in pajamas.
Yeah, that's
those
the
are the best videos.
Yeah. Well, people in the area even started referring to Oscar as the Goat Man because of how well their business was doing. Most everyone around took quite a liking to the Washburn family, and thus their small farmstead began to prosper. However, back then, there were a few hateful people who just couldn't bear to see a black man and his family come into large sums of money. When Oscar decided to hang a sign on the other side of Old Alton Bridge that read, quote, "This way to the Goat Man," it was the last straw. Some local Klansmen, you know, of the KKK variety, they gathered together in August of 1938, and in the pitch black of the night, they drove to the Washburn farm. As they neared the Old Alton Bridge, they shut off their headlights and they crossed over in secret. Once on the property, the Klansmen snuck up and broke into the Washburn home. They pulled Oscar out of his bed into the night, and leaving a few men to guard the rest of the Washburn family, they made off into the darkness with Oscar. By the light of their torches, the hooded men drug him back to the nearby Alton Bridge. They fashioned a noose around his neck and the other end to the bridge's railing. Then they threw the pleading man over the side of the bridge. Some say the men quickly became puzzled. The lack of sound after Oscar went over the side was alarming, because you see, it was a dead quiet night, and the rope was slack. The Klansmen were curious how they could have missed the sound of Oscar splashing into the Hickory River if he had somehow slipped the noose and tried to escape. After searching for some time, the men could find no trace of the Goat Man by the light of their torches. Deciding that their thirst for blood was not yet sated, the Klansmen returned to the Washburn farmstead and burned it to the ground with Oscar's family still inside.
This is not a fun story. This is awful.
It's pretty bad.
Oh, my.
Ever since the fateful day back in 1838, some strange reports have continued to surface in the area around the Goatman's Bridge. There have been sightings of apparitions with the head of a goat, demonic red-eyed floating goat skulls, and large, hairy, malicious satyr beasts that roam the area. More specifically, back when you could still drive over the bridge, a popular legend went that if you crossed with your headlights off, just like the Klansmen had done, and then you honked your horn twice, you would almost be certain to meet the Goat Man on the other side. What he did with you afterwards was, well, his business and his alone. You would be considered lucky if you lived to tell the tale. Another way to supposedly summon the spirit, which people still attempt to do to this day, is to simply walk to the center of the bridge and knock 3 times on one of the bridge trusses. If done correctly, the Goat Man will appear and deliver his judgment to his summoners. Yes, people still travel to Goat Man's Bridge to tempt their fate and see if he will appear. Many report they don't experience anything at all, while others have claimed to hear horse hooves clopping along on the bridge, or the sound of old cars rattling their way across, perhaps even beastly growling coming from the woods, or laughter from nefarious spirits all around them that sounds like children. Some have even said to have heard the bleating of distressed goats that follow you back to your vehicle where you parked. The worst of it is a large, satyr-like figure tending his herd who can be seen in the woods nearby the old bridge. Local paranormal experts reason that the varied reports are due to the nature of the Goat Man's tale. Some believe you better check your family tree before venturing out late at night to visit the old Goat Man's Bridge. For you see, the popular theory is the Goat Man has a taste for souls descendant from Ku Klux Klan members.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you better get on Ancestry.com and find out if you might have some Klan members in your past, because if you do, don't go a-knockin', because the Goat Man will come a-rockin', I guess. Over the years, a few bodies have been discovered at the bridge, or in its waters, down below. Most have been chalked up to suicides or the occasional murder. But a lot of paranormal experts believe that these were the acts of the Goat Man. In the nearby woods, you can find several abandoned vehicles. Again, paranormal experts will point to these and say that these belong to people who have tried the old headlight gag and have never made it home.
Ooh.
Shelley Tucker, an author and storyteller in Denton, leads regular ghost tours in the area. She claims through her years of research that no African-American man named Oscar Washburn ever lived near Old Alton Bridge, and that there is no record of a lynching in Denton, Texas in 1938. However, other genealogical experts and historians will also point to the inaccuracies of census data and historical records during the late 1930s and say that lynchings definitely could have happened and have happened in nearby counties, which have gone unreported until later in history.
Oh, that's absolutely the case.
Yeah, and it's very reasonable that someone like Oscar Washburn could have lived near the bridge and could have been lynched and not been documented. We've discovered this in another episode that we did about a lynching in a very big city. Dallas went through a lot of painstaking efforts to sweep that lynching under the rug and kind of ignore it in the annals of history, right? And I could see something very similar happening in this small town that was pretty much a ghost town that's out on the border of Denton. And I could see it getting swept under the rug of time and history, and we're left to wonder if there is maybe some small little tidbit of truth to old Oscar Washburn's story. What I do know is I won't be knocking three times on Old Alton Bridge any night soon. Would you?
No, I would not, but some anti-KKK vengeance is something I can actually get behind.
Yeah, I thought that part was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I love a ghost that just has like a rightful vengeance, like a righteousness behind his horror.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah. Man, that's if that story is true, that's messed up and you should be haunting people.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I have some more facts about this story that I'm going to relay to you at the end. But if you've been paying attention, Aaron, I mentioned at the top of my story that there are multiple cases involving such a creature in and around the Metroplex. What if I told you that we had our own Goatman legend right here in Fort Worth?
I did not know that.
Well, that's exactly what we're about to get into, so...
Does he live in the creek behind our house?
Wouldn't that be amazing if we had our own, like, bridge situation? Because we have these train tracks, and there's a big trellis, and this bridge that goes over the creek, and that somebody had been hung there. No, that's not the truth. Well, this mystery begins back in the fall of 1969, the summer of love, Aaron. This involves dozens of people who were gathered in what was a popular Fort Worth hangout near Greer Island, a sand pit that was inside the now Fort Worth Nature Center and Refuge. So this enclosed area was surrounded by high cliffs and brush on all sides. That area was surrounded by like marshland and a forest area. According to their website, the Fort Worth Nature Center and Refuge is a natural area comprised of forests, prairies, wetlands, and was developed after the damming of Lake Worth. In 1964, the area of the center was established. It covered like 3,600 acres, making this one of the largest city-owned natural centers in the United States incorporated into an urban area.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of right smack dab in the middle of the Metroplex. And it's this kind of natural refuge that a lot of citizens go to go hiking and trail riding and all that kind of stuff.
Kayaking. Yeah. And I know they have nature walks and stuff. Uh-huh. I think we've planned to go out there several times, but I don't know if we ever have made it out there.
I've gone out there as a kid. I used to take nature classes out there. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun, and I really loved it. One of my aunts who worked at the Fort Worth Zoo used to take me out there, and it was a really good time.
Oh. Well, depending on what you're about to tell me about this place, we should go. But maybe we shouldn't. Please continue.
Yeah, I'll let you decide. Well, let's get back to these young partiers that are hanging out at Greer Island, which pretty much sits in the middle of this marshland area. These kids were doing like everybody else would back in the summer of 1969. They found their way out into this newly protected area via some dirt roads and some trails. And around midnight, they were listening to some loud rock music and throwing back plenty of Texas beers when something strange happened. As told by Rob Dinkus, a Fort Worth Nature Center staff biologist, during the time of the event, quote, "The witnesses heard a disturbance and a loud scream. Then a tire with a rim attached came flying from some 500 feet off of that ridge. The tire smashed into one of the vehicles, and everyone in attendance looked in the direction of where the object originated. Now, witnesses looked up and later on reported back to authorities. And some of the ways they described this creature that flung this tire and this rim was a half-man, half-goat sort of humanoid. They said that it towered about 7 feet tall and somewhere around 300 to 350 pounds. Some of the other details were that it was hairy, it had horns, and it had these patchy areas of skin that have scales on it. Witnesses said that it growled and screamed down at them from its perch on the ridge before it ran off into the oak woods without a trace. What do you think about that?
That's creepy. It's a scaled, furry goat man?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Who can hurl a tire with a rim on it 500 feet into a car.
Hmm.
Well, even though the group faced fines for trespassing, they alerted the authorities, police arrived, they took statements, they made reports and they filed them, and local newspapers ran a headline stating, quote, "Fishy man goat terrifies couple parked at Lake Worth."
Fishy man goat?
Yeah. I only hope to be titled such later in life, fishy man goat.
Aw, you're my little fishy man goat.
Oh, thank you. Well, rumors began to spread as local news stations started to arrive at Fort Worth Nature Center and started to take footage and report on the case. Well, police even began to fear that a mob of rifle-toting citizens would try to take matters into their own hands and kill the monster of Greer Island. They started to get a couple of posses of people, some mobs showing up trying to break into the property and go hunt down the goat man.
Calm down, guys. He really didn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, he was just mad about some, you know, late 60s prog rock playing a little too loud. He's trying to sleep, trying to get some beauty rest.
Hey, I get it. It was probably some horrible 60s jam band.
Hey, he's got scaly patches on his body. He's probably got his ointment on. He's got his night mask. He's laid down, and then all of a sudden, some Jethro Tull comes on, you know? Well, five people claimed that they saw the monster break the limb of an old oak tree along the main road through the Fort Worth Nature Center property. Another instance was reported where a few beachgoers were scared into their cars at sundown by a, quote, "giant goat man." Not the fishy part. He's just a giant goat man at this point.
Oh, okay. Maybe there's a few different ones.
Could be. It could be a whole family.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's just got fish mange.
Yes. One of them has bird feathers.
Mm-hmm. One of them has a pigtail and wings.
Now that just sounds kind of cute.
It does, right? Well, Jim Stevens, another local who was excited to get a bunch of guys together and go hunt down the goat man, he took a few buddies out one night to hunt the beast. He loaded his car up with beer, guns, and friends, and began driving through the nature preserve. During their drive, Jim claimed that a monster, real big and human-like, with burned scars and scales all over its face and patchy spots on its arms and chest, jumped onto the hood of its Mustang. "Its heavy weight crushed my hood," he said, "and it sent me into a terrible skid." Jim also said that the goat man hung onto the hood of his car until he crashed into a nearby tree on the side of the road. Jim and his buddies were ticketed, but also signed statements to their account of the events and said that the beast ran off into the woods before they could fire off a shot.
Hmm. How many of those Texas beers had those guys pounded?
Yeah, how many road sodas were sitting in the floorboard?
Right.
Well, the Goatman fever came to a boil when in November of the same year, a man named Alan Plaster snapped a grainy picture of what appeared to be a woolly beast walking through the high grass of Greer Island, attempting to evade him and the other pursuers, their guns, and their flashlights.
Woolly, huh? So this is a goat-sheep hybrid.
Sort of,
yeah. You got a goat-fish?
Yeah, and it...
Goat-sheep?
I'll show you the picture here in a little bit. It looks pretty bright and white. So, again, Plaster and a group of trained hunters have been tracking what appeared to be cloven footprints in the muddy river bottoms of the area. They tracked it to this certain spot on Greer Island, and as they were kind of stumbling through the high grass and the shrubs, they inadvertently kind of appeared onto the area where the goat man had been doing something. Plaster said that he was holding his camera when he was startled by some twigs snapping nearby. And when he turned to shine his flashlight in that area, he realized it was the beast himself. You can imagine, such a picture was taken. He was able to snap off a little quick shot with his camera. And you can see the high grass and this like white silhouette kind of trying to flee. And it's pretty reminiscent to the Patterson-Gimlin film from just a year earlier in 1967, which we know now as the infamous Bigfoot footage.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that has something to do with it, you know, like if it was probably a really big thing when it happened a year earlier, and if he was trying to get his own footage of this new cryptid that was lurking in his neighborhood. I don't know. But cryptozoologists around the world have sought out Alan Plaster and his photo negatives for this very reason. True believers think that this is, in fact, footage of a real goat man. After an abnormally heavy and hard winter, though, the sightings of the Lake Worth goat man died down, and all that was left was the legend, the stories, and Alan Plaster's photo. Many people still believe that this large, natural preserve could still be home to a half-human, half-goat hybrid beast. Others say an off-beaten-path community of a few dozen people are to blame for these occurrences. That's because their families were pressured to move out of the area by the city of Fort Worth when the preserve was under its preliminary construction phase. And though they were threatened with loss of utilities and mostly abandoned inside of this preserve, they decided to stay and make a life for themselves.
What, is this going to be like a Hills Have Eyes situation?
So, yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. There's this group of people that kind of lived in the swampy river bottoms of this area. They had some trailers and some shanty houses set up. They decided to dam up the lake and make the area a preserve. And they gave everybody the option to move out and pay them to move. Well, there was like a couple of dozen people that didn't want to leave. They were kind of people that wanted to be left alone and be out there for a reason.
Yeah, weird swamp people.
Kind of, yeah. Like our own Fort Worth swamp people. One of them in particular was a practical joker, a prankster, and he was known to really love Halloween and costumes.
Oh.
And a lot of people point to this guy and say, like, he probably made a goat man suit and was trying to scare people away from hanging out in that area, you know, in hopes of retaining their quiet solitude in the river bottoms of Lake Worth.
Maybe this says something about me, because where my mind was going was that they, over the years, had had incestual relationships with each other and also with goats, thereby creating this weird
goat
genetic
hybrid
goat man freak that then haunts these hills, which is, in my defense, a much more interesting story.
What was that were-sheep movie that we own?
Oh, Black Sheep, right? It's just called
Black
Sheep?
Sheep. It's in New Zealand where the zombie were-sheep.
Oh, we need to watch that again.
Oh,
it's
man.
Been so long.
That's
I remember
really good.
It being hilarious.
That makes me think of goat men.
Yes. Well, yeah, they were sheep men, but very close.
Very close, yeah. Well, perhaps this weird, ostracized, small community of off-gridders is to blame. Or maybe, just maybe, the veil of protection of this world thinned just enough to its breaking point during the fall months close to Halloween when these events both took place. Just enough so that the Goatman of Greer Island could cross over and torment our mortal plane, and so much that Oscar Washburn could transform himself into the phantasm of Goatman's Bridge. You tell me, ACNC Posse. Sleep tight, and keep a light on and an eye peeled on those woods tonight. There may just be a Texas goat man lurking among those oaks. Now, I'd like to leave you with some disambiguation. Would you like some?
Sure.
There is a haunted house up in Denton, along Hickory Creek, right near Old Alton Bridge.
Oh, of course.
And it unfortunately closed in 2014. But when you could go there, you could go on this really cool hike down the river. And it culminated at the bridge where somebody would be dressed up as Oscar Washburn, as the goat man.
I love
it. He'd have like severed heads of humans and goats and like a big blade. Yeah. Like a noose
that
around his neck.
So scary.
Yeah. And there was like smoke and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. That would have been so scary.
Would you like some 5-star reviews of Old Alton Bridge?
Of course.
Ram Ranch says 5 stars. Really interesting place with a spooky vibe. I met the goat man here and he tried to convert me to Islam. Luckily, I have the power of God and anime on my side.
Okay, that's a lot of different things.
Oh, by the way, these are from Google.com, like Google Maps. If you just go search old Alton Bridge.
It's just a bunch of trolls?
I don't know.
Amazon.com reviews?
There's 221 of them. And old Alton Bridge has a 4.3 out of 5 review.
Oh, not too shabby.
A lot of people talk about how the mosquitoes are really bad and you need to wear bug spray when you go, and that it's really nice and beautiful, but there's some graffiti, and that they meet the goat man.
Oh.
A lot of people mention seeing the goat man. Like this person, Christopher Satterfield, says, "Nice place to go on a short hike at night. I knocked on the bridge, saw the goat man, and it changed my life."
Wow. He's such an afterthought in these people's stories.
So the last one I'll read is from Nick Hatley. He gives it 5 stars, and this was 3 months ago. He said, "You need to be very careful coming to this bridge. Not only is it very haunted, but the wilderness around can be very dangerous as well. Numerous sacrifices have been made on the bridge. I can tell by the blood markings. Attempts to reach spirits and demons with Ouija boards and rituals are documented in the area. Not only do you have to worry about the goat man, but also the other relentless spirits as well. We have EVP documentation of growls, blood-curdling screams, and voices at this location. My brother showed up once with us while we were documenting the area, and he ended up with 3 deep scratch marks in his back through his shirt and was knocked down twice on the bridge while trying to escape. Demons are very real, and you don't need to mess with them. The goat man is certainly one to be aware of. Just warning you now, this place is evil." 5 stars.
Oh, 5 stars.
Yeah.
Sounds like they had some KKK blood in their family line.
Yeah, right? Oh, man. A local journalist, Sally Ann Clark, took a keen interest in the story of the Lake Worth Goatman and actually wrote a book about it. It's a short book, but it's a collection of local newspaper clippings and interviews with witnesses. It's really interesting if you want to learn more about the monster of Greer Island. A local volunteer fireman admitted to the scaring of the 2 beach girls on his deathbed, but he also said that he had nothing to do with the actual goat man, which he still believed was real. So finally, I'll end with, will you go out with me to Old Alton Bridge as well as the Fort Worth Nature Preserve and look for the various goat men of our area?
Yes, I will. There's pretty much nothing more that I want out of life.
Yeah, I think we're probably just going to find a bunch of like beer cans, graffiti, and probably gators at the Fort Worth Nature Preserve.
Of course.
It's rampant.
Yeah, they're overrun now.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do this, and let's record our experience.
Our findings?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We can make a Patreon episode out of it.
Well, what'd you think? What'd you think of the old Goatman's Bridge and the Goatman of Fort Worth?
Awesome. I mean, I think I've heard of various goat people, but
Never heard the full story?
No, I don't think so. Neither one of those stories, so that's really interesting.
You know what's fascinating is as you get close to the border, there's a lot of Mexican folklore that spreads over from Mexico into Texas, and there's a lot of like goat man folklore in Mexico.
Yeah.
And we've kind of incorporated that in like San Antonio, Austin, Houston area. But these stories are specifically North Texan, and that's why they're a little bit unique and they have a little different twist on them, as one of them comes from an African American lynching story in Denton, and the other comes as like a kind of a weird outlier, possibly off-grid community that lives in this marsh in Fort Worth. So it's kind of a different twist, different angle on the Goatman story. I found it interesting. And at this point, I'm going to pass the old spooky crystal ball over to you, Aaron, and see what you can give us.
Well, thank you. And I will start my story right after this. Hey, ACNC Posse. Isn't it crazy how much we pay for new brand name clothes? Wouldn't it be great if there was a place to discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes right from the comfort of your home? Well, there is. It's swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving to store after store and sifting through racks. Easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on swap.com with easy-to-use filters to find just what you need. With Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Lululemon, Carter's, Nike, J.Crew, Gap, and more. Quality, hand-inspected items are added to daily, and you can find new deals every day on Swap.com's homepage. And if something doesn't fit, you can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. As a special offer for our listeners, get 35% off select items on your first order with promo code TEXAS. That's 35% off select items for your first order with promo code TEXAS. Hurry up and check out swap.com today. Well, I've got a tale worthy to end our night. It begins as a story based in rich historical detail, but transcends into a nightmare of murder, vengeance, and an evil force that wanders the lands throughout South Texas, named El Muerto. What is the intersection between fact and folklore, and which legends have an edge of truth to them, haunting us for hundreds of years? So pull up a chair, drawn close to the fire, and have a few pulls of whiskey, for tonight it won't just be the frigid night air that sends a chill up your spine.
Oh, I'm already scared.
This tale was first written down by Texas Ranger Creed Taylor in the 1850s. Later in 1865, Thomas Mayne Reed put his own spin on the story in his book The Headless Horseman, or A Strange Tale of Texas. Later still, J. Warren Hunter and James T. DeShields and J. Frank Dobie all wrote of these events. So how much of this tale is fact and how much is fiction is unknown. The story begins in the 1840s along the contentious border between Texas and Mexico. You see, the United States declared the border between the two countries to be the Rio Grande, but Mexico refused, declaring instead that the more northerly Nueces River should be the border. The 400-mile-long, 150-mile-wide stretch of land between the Rio Grande and the Nueces came to be known as the Nueces Strip and became hotly contended. For 30 years, the Nueces Strip was a no-man's land, an area that was often a good refuge for outlaws and bandidos. The Texas Rangers tried to keep an eye on the area, but with few men and hundreds of miles to attend to, much of the Nueces Strip was lawless. And what do you think one of the most reviled and criminal acts was in Texas in the mid-1800s?
Cattle rustling.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That is correct. Or in this case particularly, the stealing of horses. Now, stealing livestock was a major offense, one that carried major repercussions if you were caught, but was very lucrative if you weren't. Stealing horses and cattle could be relatively easy, you see. The huge swaths of open land where they grazed meant that they were difficult for owners to track. All you had to do was walk in, separate a few from the herd, and take them back to your place. Thieves would typically then rebrand the animals to cover up their crimes. Cattle was worth huge money for their meat and milk, and horses were essential for transport and farm work. If you needed to get around at all in Texas, you needed a horse. So because of livestock's importance to the economy, wealth, power, and everyday necessity, they were highly valued, frequently stolen, and the punishments were severe. Back in those days, being caught stealing horses and cattle was a death sentence. Not by the law, of course, but from vigilantes, pissed off citizens, or from the ranchers themselves. Most of the thieves were fellow Americans bent on making themselves some extra money. But Native Americans and Mexicans also troubled South Texas ranches, stealing as much livestock and other property they could. And that's where Mexican bandito Vidal comes into the picture.
Oh, interesting. I like where this is going.
Yes. Vidal was a notorious horse thief throughout South Texas and northern Mexico. He was the head of a gang of horse thieves who operated quickly and efficiently. And one day in 1848, he and his gang targeted a large herd of horses from a pasture near the San Antonio River, driving them away and back towards Mexico. But as Vidal would soon learn, this was the wrong herd to abduct. For unbeknownst to them, some of the horses they made off with were owned by Texas Ranger William Alexander Anderson Wallace, who went by the nickname Bigfoot.
Oh, what a name. I like both of those names, the long one and the short one.
Bigfoot was a burly, tall man who'd once been mistaken for a wanted Native American man named Bigfoot. He'd been thrown in jail until the mistake was realized, and he was forever known after this as Bigfoot. By this time, Bigfoot was a celebrated soldier who'd fought in several battles against Mexico, such as the battles of the Hondo River, of Monterey, and in the Comanche Wars. In 1842, Bigfoot Wallace was a part of a Texan army that was defeated by Mexican forces and taken into central Mexico as captives. While imprisoned, the Mexican captors decided to put on a little ghoulish lottery to decide the fate of their prisoners. A collection of black and white beans were put into a pot, and the captives were made to draw one out at random. If he picked a white bean, he would remain in prison. If he selected a black bean, he would be executed. This trial would come to be known as the Black Bean episode. Bigfoot Wallace was one of the lucky men to draw a white bean and lived to tell the tale. After he was released from prison in Mexico, he later joined up with the Texas Rangers and helped to patrol South Texas to fight off bandits and Indians. He was an excellent tracker, and his skills were well used in tracking down thieves and other ne'er-do-wells. When Bigfoot Wallace discovered that some of his prized Mustangs had been stolen, he was outraged. And what's more, he was out for revenge. Not in any official capacity as a Texas Ranger, of course, but as a rancher who wanted his damn horses back along with a healthy dose of Texas justice.
It sounds like they picked the wrong guy to steal some livestock from.
Yeah, they definitely made a mistake this time.
Oh.
So Bigfoot Wallace enlisted his friend and fellow Texas Ranger, John McPeters, to help find the bandits responsible for his stolen horses. McPeters, too, was a seasoned soldier who fought at the Battle of San Jacinto. And so the two Texas Rangers set off to find the horse thieves. It wasn't long before Bigfoot and McPeters were able to track down Vidal and his men as they traveled south and west towards Mexico. Well-trained in combat and military maneuvers, the two waited for the bandits to fall asleep before attacking. They were able to get the jump on the bandits, killing several of them in the process, while others fled. Not so lucky was the leader, Vidal, who was captured alive. Bigfoot and McPeters thought about what to do with this criminal. Bigfoot wanted to make a point to all the would-be thieves out there that stealing horses, especially his horses, wouldn't be tolerated in the Nueces Strip. He knew all the gory details of previous punishments of horse thieves, each a little worse than the last. Horse and cattle thieves suffered some of the cruelest punishments in the Old West. Some had been hanged, their bodies left to rot to pieces for all to see. Others had been horribly mutilated. And still others had been butchered after death and left out to the open for scavengers to consume.
The old sky burial treatment.
All of these punishments were done to seek retribution for the crimes and to serve as a warning to other would-be thieves. So what would Bigfoot Wallace and McPeters do to take their revenge? After some thought, the two made their final decision and moved to carry out their plan. As they closed in on the bandit Vidal, his last words to the Rangers were a curse, to them and to the people of Texas. Vidal exclaimed that he would come back to kill them all. With Vidal's words ringing in their ears, Bigfoot and McPeters set to their grisly business. They killed Vidal and then removed his head from his body. They then took one of the strongest and biggest Mustangs and saddled it in full riding gear. They took Vidal's headless corpse and lashed it to the saddle, tying the feet to the stirrups and the hands to the pommel. And finally, they fit Vidal's sombrero snugly on his severed head, then lashed it to the pommel, letting the head hang like some macabre saddlebag.
Oh.
Bigfoot and McPeters set the Mustang off with a swift slap to the behind, letting the Mustang roam free for the world to see and fear. Within days, sightings of a headless horseman swept across the Nueces Strip. Cowboys and ranchers and bandits and Indians alike were horrified by the ghastly headless figure and, in their fear, attacked, Men reported shooting at the creature, but it did not fall from the saddle. In fact, it did not seem to react at all. It could not be killed. Those who came across the lone figure fled in terror from the terrifying image. Word spread about the evil creature wandering the Texas countryside, and the headless monster soon came to be called El Muerto, the Dead One. But then one day, near the tiny town of Benbolt, a group of cowboys stopped at a watering hole to water their horses and caught sight of the wild Mustang and its rider. The men were able to capture the Mustang and get a better look at the figure atop it. They found the shriveled corpse propped up on the saddle, the skin almost mummified. The body was riddled with bullet holes and arrows. The flesh hung sickly from the severed head, the skull underneath grinning maniacally as maggots crawled out of its eyes.
Ugh.
Taking pity on the dead man, the group freed the corpse from its bonds and laid it to rest in an unmarked grave. But that is not where our story ends. You see, after the corpse was buried, the sightings of El Muerto atop his evil steed continued unabated, but this time with a more supernatural bent. It's as if after Vidal was freed from his physical fetters and given a proper burial, his spirit was moved to wander the earth in the same form given to him by his killers. El Muerto is now set upon the grim task of fulfilling his final curse, to cause as much destruction and death as possible to the people of Texas. Instead of a lifeless corpse, sightings of El Muerto now include a living, breathing entity, his eyes glowing from his decapitated head with a fierce malevolence, forever searching for his next victim. His unearthly steed breathes fire, and bolts of lightning shoot from its hooves whenever it thunders towards its prey. If you're so lucky as to see El Muerto and leave with your life, you will be forever doomed to a terrible fate as he brings misfortune to everyone who lays their eyes upon him. Sightings of El Muerto have occurred throughout the many years since the gruesome death of the Bandido Vidal. In 1917, near San Diego, Texas, a husband and wife narrowly escaped El Muerto's clutches as they were traveling one dark and gloomy night. In 1969, El Muerto was reported to attack a group of travelers near Freer, Texas, and sightings of the headless horseman continue even today. So beware, people of South Texas, for El Muerto is very much alive, forever haunting the dark nights in search of vengeance. If you ever find yourself alone in the strip of land between the Nueces River and the Rio Grande on a moonlit night, El Muerto just may seek you out for his terrible retribution. You will see the horse first, its silhouette barely visible in the moonlight. Its huge flanks will ripple under the burden of its rider, and puffs of soft smoke snake out from its nostrils in the cool night air. As it surveys the landscape before it with eyes glowing as red as the setting sun, it will see you. The great beast cries out in a high-pitched wail that sounds like a scream. And a jet of fire bursts forth from its great maw. The horse begins to move towards you in the darkness, its hooves barely emitting sound as it closes the distance. Yet screaming bolts of lightning burst forth from each footfall. The sound of the panting beast resonates off the trees and the hillsides and the very stones of the earth. But you hear something else too. A steady thump, thump, thump noise in time with the horse's gallop. You stand still, praying that maybe it didn't see you, or that your eyes are playing tricks on you, that if you don't move, the monster will pass you by in the night. But you never get the chance to realize that you couldn't have taken a single step even if you wanted to. Your body is frozen with a terror that you have never felt before, and every muscle, every fiber of your being has been paralyzed with fear. The thumping noise increases in volume and pace, louder now, howling into your ears and brain like the beating of the heart of the devil. Quickly now, the great steed will approach, bearing down on you, and as it moves closer, you'll begin to make out the shape of its rider. Clad in a ragged serape, with two bandoliers crossing its chest and silver pistols glinting in the moonlight, the figure is from out of time. But to your growing horror, you realize that this man, this thing, is headless. A gaping stump thick with old blood is where its head should be. As your brain tries to process this new threat and your eyes survey the grisly specter, that thump, thump, thump sound gets ever louder, and to your horror, you spot the reason for the noise. The thing's head. It's festooned in a black sombrero and tied to the saddle, and with every step the demonic horse takes, the head thumps against the rider. And as the evil creatures bear down on you, the head's eyes will flick open and glow with an evil that's brighter than the moon above. You'll open your mouth to scream, and then they are upon you.
That's terrifying.
Be careful out there, you guys. Ooh.
Man, that's a really scary story. I love it. Did you write all that?
Yeah.
Wow, man, you're like a horror fiction writer.
Was
we
it
got
good?
On our hands. Yeah. Got the next Stephen King down here.
It's interesting, though, because this story is very much kind of like the Goatman story. Like you were saying, there's different iterations and versions across Texas, across the country, across the world. Of course, the most famous of those stories is Washington Irving's story of Sleepy Hollow and the Headless Horseman.
Oh, yeah. The old Ichabod Crane tale.
That's right. And that was published about 30 years before Creed Taylor's story was first published. So one of the questions is, was Sleepy Hollow an inspiration for this Texas tale? Or does this Texas Headless Horseman draw back even further when it was finally put down to paper? It's involved with all these sort of historical details.
Mm. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But, you know, El Muerto is still out there and people still see him.
Same thing with the Goat Man.
Yeah.
I hope that was fun. I hope everybody enjoyed themselves. I know I did. That was really good. You terrified the crap out of me with your Headless Horseman story.
Yeah, did you like it?
I liked it a lot.
Good. I was worried it wasn't going to be scary.
Well, it was very scary, and your narration was amazing.
Well, friends and foes, the fire is dying, the night is late, and it's time for us all to go to bed with visions of El Muerto and the Goatman in our head. Until next year. This has been All Crime, No Cattle. Be sure to stick around in a minute for the after show. Sleep well.
All right, guys, that was a little something special for you. I hope you enjoyed that episode.
Yeah, it really was. It was a lot of fun. It was a little something different, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and right now we would usually be doing our good news segment, but we are skipping that this week because you know what? The good news is that it's Halloween.
Yeah.
And it's the best time of the year.
The other good news is maybe some of those stories you just heard are not real. Or are they? Okay, so recommendations. Who are we recommending this week?
Well, this week it is Mugshots. So you guys have probably heard the fantastic podcast, Corpus Delicti, or Corpus Delicti, depending on how you'd like to say it. And it's hosted by two really great friends of ours, Jen and Lindsay. They have a fantastic show. And recently, Lindsay has started her own show because
right.
Lindsay is one of those people who is extra.
Yeah, she's got kids. She's got a full-time job.
And then she's like, why don't I just do two podcasts?
Yeah.
Crazy. And they're both fantastic.
Yep. Mugshots is great. So is the first one we mentioned. And, you know, they helped both Lindsay and Jen helped us a lot when we first got started.
Yeah, they're great people.
Yeah.
So our recommendation this week is for Mugshots. That's Lindsay's new podcast. It's a really great show. And it's special in that it's a true crime podcast, but without the murder. So it's basically any other kind of crime that you might be interested in where there's no actual deaths, which that's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Lindsay's tagline for the show is, you've heard the stories about bloody murder and horrendous homicide, but what about the rest of the crimes committed on a daily basis? And so that kind of gives you a clue that she's going to be talking about things like robbery, fraud, arson, stalkers, assault cases, stuff like that. And if you want a great episode to start with, can I recommend one? I would say
let me guess.
You should start with episode 13 first. This is the Bill Mason Master Jewel Thief episode. Because I play Mr. Bill Mason.
Oh.
Yeah. I got some lines in that episode. I do some voice work. And then you can go back to episode one and you can start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then re-listen to episode 13 again.
Yeah. And marvel at that beautiful voice.
That's right.
But it's a really great show. We highly recommend it. And like we said, we love Jen and Lindsay so much. And totally cool that Lindsay has put another show together, and especially another show that is top-notch quality, like both Corpus Delicti and Mugshots.
Yep.
Fantastic, fantastic work.
She's a phenom. She's a force to be reckoned with.
I know. Scary.
All right. Well, how about Lindsay tells you the rest right after this?
All right. Sounds good.
You've heard the stories about bloody murder and horrendous homicide. But what about the other crimes that people fall victim to each and every day? What about the police officer who robbed banks during lunch? Or the multi-million dollar diamond heist? What about the assaulters, fraudsters, stalkers, and arsonists? I'm Lindsay, the host of Mugshot. Mugshot is a true crime podcast that tells the action-packed stories of non-murderous crimes. Mugshot can be found on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and most other podcatchers. You can also find me on social media at the handle @mugshotpod. I hope you'll join me, but until then, be on your best behavior, or you might end up pictured in your very own mugshot.
It's that special time of the podcast again, where we tell you our 5-star reviews.
We say thank you to you.
Yes. Very soon this will not be a thing, but for right now it is a thing. So before we begin, let's get you set up with our cool social media things that you can look at and, you know, follow.
Yeah, you can go.
That was weird.
The first place I would recommend you go to is our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/allcrimenocattle. And there you can get all the sneak peeks of upcoming stuff if you've been deputized. And patrons already know what this episode is about, and they've got a little sneak peek trailer earlier. So they're already getting some of the goods. So go check that out. We got some great reward tiers and stuff there, and bonus episodes, ad-free listening, all that good stuff.
And our first Patreon episode will be dropped within the next 4 days.
Yep.
just gonna give that perfect 4-day increment. Anyways, you can also find us online at Twitter at ACNC Podcast or on Instagram at All Crime No Cattle. You can drop us a line at our Gmail account, which is allcrimenocattle@gmail.com. And you can go and hang out on our Facebook page.
Yep. Got stuff over there too. Just search All Crime No Cattle and you'll find us.
Dash right. All right. Let's do some Facebook 5-star reviews.
Let's do it. So first of all, got to shout out our special producer of the show. Where would we be without our amazing producer, Lisa L., your Texas Ranger. Thank you so much, Lisa. You're the best.
You are the best, Lisa. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone.
Oh, boy.
Tina Turner wrote that song about Lisa L.
That's right. Enjoy that, Lisa.
All right. Well, our first 5-star review comes from Shannon Stone. And they said, love, love, love these two. Not only are their stories amazingly told, with more respect for the victims than the perpetrators, a hard find lately. I love that they always clarify things that maybe a layman may not know, such as a sawed-off. The amount of research that these two do is very evident in their stories and is very refreshing. I adore this podcast.
Aww.
Thank you, Shannon. Very nice. We adore you. The next review comes from Cosma Johnson, who says, great hosts. Shan and Aaron really do some great research, excellent sound quality, and presentations. Thank you, Cosma. I agree.
Yep.
We are great.
Sound is pretty freaking awesome, isn't it?
Terry Pryor Gibson says, just found y'all. I'm up in Lubbock and really enjoying your podcast. Really appreciate you guys keeping it classy. Keep up the great work. Texas is a big state full of a lot of crime. Yes, it is. And I think that's the second time we've been called classy in so many episodes.
All I got to say is guns up, Lubbock.
That's right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Bing, bang, boom. Pew, pew, pew. Next one is from Brenda Dixius Hamilton, who says, love it. They're funny, but do a great job talking about the stories. Thank you, Brenda.
So many people think we're funny. I think we're pretty dumb, but
we don't try to be funny.
We're just
honestly
goofy.
Yeah. Pete Lewis says, I found ACNC on Spotify when looking for new true crime podcasts. I'm so glad I found y'all. The stories are so well researched and you show so much compassion for the victims that I've told everyone I know about your podcast. Great job all around. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, and a quick note. Thank you, Pete. I appreciate that. That brings up a good note that we should say. If you're listening to this on something that's not Spotify and you used to listen to us on Spotify and it stopped working, it's just a dead feed. You need the new feed.
Yeah.
We are on Spotify still, but you can find all that information. And if you're ever listening to us on a podcatcher like iTunes, Google Play, the list goes on, and your feed stops working and you don't get episodes anymore, go check our About page at our Facebook, and that has a whole list of every one of our feeds, and you can just click on it on your phone, and it'll take you right to where you're supposed to go, and you'll have all the episodes.
Woo woo!
Yeah, simple as that.
Yeah, a lot of people were very worried, thinking that we, like, quit the show or something.
Nope, we're still here, you just don't have the right feed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Jerilyn Womble Gover says, I just moved to Atlanta from the DFW area, and they make my commute a little less awful. Thanks, guys. I'm so sorry, Jerilyn, that you left DFW. But Atlanta, I bet, is a pretty nice place.
Hotlanta.
Yep.
I've heard it's moist and hot.
Yeah. Jerilyn.
But I've heard there's good barbecue.
You're still an honorary Texan, no matter where you move to.
Just keep using y'all and let them know.
That's right.
And say howdy to everybody.
All right, let's do one more.
Sure.
Janessa Hall says, my new favorite podcast. If you love true crime, this is a must. Thanks for doing an all-Texan podcast. Thank you, Janessa. We would do nothing else.
Well, you're mighty welcome, partner.
All right, what do we got going on in iTunes?
Well, over on the iTunes, we got Timber580, and they say, great podcast. I really enjoy this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Short and sweet.
Mm-hmm. Jay Strick says, so two episodes in and I'm hooked. This podcast is great. Thank you.
Okay. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you liked it because our first two episodes, not perfect, but we like them. We're glad that you kept on listening.
Yeah. That's all we have to say about that. Brian's Jen says, ACNC rocks my socks. Started listening on Monday and I can't stop. These stories are incredibly interesting. And Shay and Aaron, did I get them right? Yes, you did. You actually did spell them correctly. They're funny, smart, and fabulous at storytelling. Also, they're Brandon Sanderson / Robert Jordan fans. What up? Love you guys. Please keep up the amazing jobs. I like how they said job and then with the S in parentheses because they know that this is a job, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
In different ways.
It's like six jobs.
It is. Oh, and of course, they love our taste in authors. And hey, if you need some good fantasy sci-fi books, check out some Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson.
That's right.
Pretty great. Lupe Ochoa says, just started hearing y'all, and I'm enjoying it. Texas born and raised. And she's out.
Watch out for El Morito.
ATXMER says, great podcast. Just discovered your podcast and I'm really enjoying it. I'm now binge listening on episode 12. I'm in Austin, so I love that all the cases are from Texas. And then we got a great name, Citrus Sunshine. They say, love it. I really love the genuine reactions that the listener has in the episodes. The episode about Dimebag Daryl was so amazing. It brought me to tears. So far, that's my favorite one. I didn't know that much about it before this episode. Thank you.
That was a good episode, Shay.
Boom, boom. Thank you.
Yeah. Poor Dimebag.
I know. And Vinny. Everybody.
Yeah, poor everybody.
Chastity Altman says, Shay and Aaron combined two of my favorite things with this podcast, true crime and Texas. I enjoy hearing about lesser known cases in my home state. The research is well done and they do the stories justice. I always look forward to new episodes. Keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you, Chastity.
Raul Duke 420 says, great podcast. I'm a native Texan. What's not to love? Would really like to hear your take on the Clarence Brandley wrongful conviction case from Conroe, Texas.
Oh.
We'll add it to the list.
Well, you know, I am looking into doing a wrongful conviction, so I will definitely keep my eye on that one.
I also have one coming up.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys, this is the last time we'll see you before Halloween. So I hope you have a happy and safe Halloween. Remember, don't drink and drive. Get a designated driver. Eat so much Halloween candy that it makes you sick. And just really enjoy yourselves out there, guys. We love you.
We do. And watch out for El Muerto. And
oh, yes.
Stay clear of those oaks, or else you might find a goat man.
All right, guys. Well, until next week, that's been our show.
You know what we always say. Crime, it's bigger in Texas, y'all. Adios.
Bye.